time to bury the tired narrative and uncover stories not typically heard, but stories that need to be heard. Right or wrong, life or death, this isn't your typical law show. This is Big Angry Law with Charles Big Angry Adams on KPRZ 950. Now, Charles Adams.
So I'm still out here in California. I apologize for not doing a show last night. I had a business meeting that went long. And I've had some pretty wonderful meals and a very nice time out here in California. It is a state filled with some very wonderful people. Beautiful. I mean, we were at the beach and you could see the mountains from Newport Beach yesterday. There is a reason that people come and live here, right? But there is also an extremism, a political extremism, that doesn't seem to me it is shared by any of the people. And I've spent some time, we've been in meetings all week, with a lot of taxpaying, law-abiding, participatory citizens, and none of them seem to be sold on the realities that are surrounding them because of politicians that most certainly at least a few of them voted into office. You, of course, have the reality also that oftentimes in America, we are faced with voting for the politician we feel will harm us the least. But in California, I mean, it's... So, I went to this wonderful restaurant, Formosa, after... Monday was a lot of eating. We landed, we went to Le Pitois, then we had a business meeting at a Hillstone property, which is the South Beverly Hills Grill, or the South Beverly Grill in Beverly Hills. And Andrew, my business partner in my recruiting business, has quite the appetite, and he's been on a significant diet. He's a big fella, right? As in, not fat like I was, but big as in probably 6'3", 6'4", power lifter. I mean, he's sitting there throwing up 750 pounds and pulling giant sleds down his street in his beautiful neighborhood in Houston. But he's been on this protein diet that he has this nutritionist, and he has escaped the diet while we travel. That's a rule. And he is just taking advantage. So we literally had three dinners on Friday a couple of days ago, and we, on our third dinner, it wasn't supposed to be. We were going to this place called the Milk Bar to try the desserts. They have this wonderful shake that has cereal in it. It's made with cereal milk and has cereal. It's very good, but it has nothing on the Waffle Bus in Houston's Cinnamon Toast Crunch Shake. But again, not my point. So we go to Formosa, which him and I had gone to on our last business trip here. We had met a producer friend of mine, Goldwatch, and an artist friend of mine, Tristan Eaton, and Tristan had picked the place. I had driven by Formosa, it's on Santa Monica Boulevard, a number of times, but I just assumed it was, it's called Formosa, I thought, and that's the street that the corner on, it's the Formosa Cafe, but I assumed it was Latin food. And I just never went in. But it is this old world Chinese food place. It's actually built around a train car that is incorporated in the dining room. And the wall is filled with movie stars and celebrities that have been there, their headshots from the 20s. I think this, and the restaurant is that old, and it's fabulous, right? It is a wonderful place to eat. Really, really good Chinese American fare, and then it's kind of clubby late at night. We slid in there at 9:50 just in time to order off the regular dinner menu, and their walnut shrimp, probably the best in the country. But when we left there, we went through a neighborhood. I like driving through neighborhoods to get to the Milk Bar, which I think is on, well, I think it's on Melrose, but I'm not sure. Anyhow, so we're going through, and there are just camp, and not like a clean campsite, just a disgusting, horrible, you know, toxic wasteland taking over entire sidewalks just everywhere in West Hollywood, everywhere in Hollywood. When you got into the neighborhood streets, they're not on the sidewalks directly in front of houses, but townhouses and apartments all over the place. And it made me reflect on this business owner in San Francisco that has been charged and pilloried for, and it is, you just spray someone with water on a cold day, that's just evil. But of course, the woman had been defecating in the front and he'd called 25 times. And then I heard this clip. Well, I'll play it.
I'm a public administrator. How much do you make?
$242,000 a year.
Can you describe what you do in one sentence?
I oversee homeless program for a very large nonprofit in the city of Los Angeles.
Oh, that's a big role. And what's your biggest struggle in that job?
Not enough housing.
That was just an Instagram thing, and it wasn't a critical reel. It was somebody that walks around and asks people what they make and what they do for a living, and it was presented as normalcy, right? That someone makes $250,000 a year to administer. I mean, it's crazy to me, right? That's what a doctor or a lawyer or, and I'm not saying it's not important what they do. It is very important. It's just not a job. And if you'd look into this business of helping the homeless, which is doing nothing really to help the homeless in places like Los Angeles, it's really just a machine to pour tax dollars into the hands of private companies like apartment complexes and hotels for people that don't go there and don't want them. Although there are some, right? We need a safety net for participatory people that have fallen through the cracks and need help. But we have this swath of people that just want to get high, do drugs, and do whatever they want all day, every day. A number of them should be institutionalized. And then we have the profiteers, the vampires that are going in that. And that is why $250 million is being spent to allegedly house 5,000 illegal entrants for 6 months in New York, because it's all about taking tax dollars and giving to people. And this woman might do a great job. She might do a horrible job. Most people I've met in those types of positions really don't do much work. And the pay scale is, it's just outrageous, right? $250,000 a year to administrate a nonprofit that's probably funded by tax dollars. But yet the blight of homelessness, I mean, obviously they're not doing a good job here. And who suffers? Well, it's the citizen taxpayers, right? And the businesses. And it's unfathomable unless you see it, right? And we just, our people that live in these neighborhoods are just expected to endure it. And if they object, they're the bad guys. And it's just absolutely insane.
This is Big Angry Law on KPRC 950.
Sirens ring, shots ring out. Stranger cries, screams out loud. I had my world strapped against my back. I held my hands, never knew how to act.
Okay, once again, Big Angry Radio, KPRC 950 AM. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you listening tonight. I hope you appreciate me making time out of my business trip out here in California to do the show that I love doing, and I'll appreciate all of y'all listening. I'm sitting in this beautiful suite at this luxury hotel in Beverly Hills. I've got a nice desk. It's a great workspace. I promise, there's a mirror here. There's a piece of art and a mirror, and I have to look at myself while I'm doing this, which is rather disconcerting because, again, face for radio, even though I'm on TV. So I'm out here in California, and there has been a incredible rash of violent mass shootings that don't fit the narrative of the day of mass shootings being driven by white supremacy. I did see a very, well, not an atypical, a very everyday argument of that we see, quite frankly, all the time now, where a Dr. Amy Tan. Well, she tweeted in this, I mean, we've had two significant mass shootings involving Asian communities in California. And she tweeted, collective grief and trauma is real. The San Gabriel Valley is a beautiful Asian majority ethnic community. Misogyny and internalized racism are part of white supremacy. People don't have to be white to uphold white supremacy. I hate that I have to tweet this on Lunar New Year's Day. Right, of course, talking about the mass shooting that was perpetrated by an elderly Asian man who then committed suicide. And somehow, able, because originally there was a lot of outcry on social media before the facts were known, that this is another example of white violence directed at the Asian community in America, and which was a prevailing narrative for a couple of years and led to a lot of legislation. And then it turned out that the perpetrators of those violence were most typically when you have violence that crosses, because most violence is intra-racial, right? As in, a white person will be criminally violent against another white person. An Asian person will be criminally violent against another Asian person. But it turned out the majority of inter-ethnic or inter-demographic, racial demographic violence, it wasn't white perpetrators against Asians. It typically, statistically, it was Black American criminals against Asians. And you know, I am one to always push back on the concept, because there are so many, and it happens all the time on Twitter, 8% of the population is committing, you know, 60% of the violent crime, and in an effort to condemn all of Black male America as opposed to Black male violent criminal America, and not, you know, punish everyone that shares this immutable characteristic or condemn everyone that is shared. And that's awful, right? It's like a teacher punishing the class for the one bad kid that's never behaving. And it means that we should be looking as to what these statistical disparities are, as opposed to just engaging in run-of-the-mill racism. However, it's equally absurd to, every time we have violence, to rush to, especially mass shootings, where the truth is that mass shootings aren't committed overwhelmingly or disparately by white male Americans. Now, certain subsets, school shootings, there is a outsized portion compared to the normal amount of violent shootings that are white male violent criminals. But even then, a lot of that is not downstream from white supremacy. It's downstream from this incel, internalized, bullied, whatever justification people could rationalize for their horrible behavior. Now, sometimes it is. The El Paso shootings, most certainly at Walmart, most certainly were driven by a racist. But there's always this rush, right? This rush to blame white male, specific white cisgendered males, right? Christian males. I saw an interesting story about the happiest country in the world being Finland, and it talked about all the things that are different in Finland, but none of it was attributed to this Western society that is, you know, that is Finland, that has pushed back against the dismantling of the good parts of Western culture, right? Because there seems to not want to be a conversation about all the wonderful contributions of Western culture to the world, as opposed to just the condemnation of all the bad. And there have most certainly been bad, but has also been a tremendous amount of good. And of course, the effort to blame all of us that share immutable characteristics with the small group of wealthy oppressors that controlled a lot of the economy in the world. But that's it, right? You know, it's easy to say your white neighbor is to blame for the ills of the world, and yet they're just as poor as you are, and they have, you know, in varying degrees in different arenas have less opportunity, and in other arenas they have more. But it's all just a vehicle for division, control, and, you know, whoever is a new group of people that can be holistically blamed by loud voices for some ill that our government has no interest in even making an effort to fix, which is really just crazy. It was crazy when it was directed at black people in the Deep South during Jim Crow. It is crazy when it's directed at people of color by white people today. But it's equally insane when it's just directed at white people generally who need to accept their privilege and bend the knee and accept being discriminated against. Or it's the craziest against the Asian immigrant community that is told that they should accept being discriminated in employment and opportunities and educational opportunities because culturally Asian students and Asian workers, which you don't speak to the whole, right? But the good students and the good workers, on average, there's a greater number. And so they're supposed to be, and it's insane to me, right? We really need to get back to this America. And I'll talk about this criticism of DeSantis and this African-American studies cancellation at some point. But we need to get back to an America where hardworking people who achieve academically or achieve educationally, no matter what their skin color is or what their ethnic identity or what their heritage or religion or orientation or whatever it is, that they all have equal footing to succeed in whatever arena, right? That's the way it should be. And saying that, well, I think that sounds perfectly reasonable, right? I don't think in Ivy Leagues they should be allowed to have a legacy of missions. I don't think if your parents are rich or they gave money to the institution, an institution that receives federal funds should be allowed to discriminate in favor of the rich or those that had the opportunity before. And I say that as someone who, you know, Harvard legacy, right? And my daughter went to, kids went to Rice. And I mean, it would probably benefit my grandkids, right? But I think it should be stripped away. I think they should be judged on their merit, period. And I most certainly was. And it was in an era when it was, you look at the test scores, you look at the work, and there were plenty of times where I lost out because I wasn't. You know, I was one of those kids with a 100 A average and a 50 homework average because I was lazy, right? And then I had a motivation to work hard, and I was allowed to achieve. But now there are a lot of people that aren't allowed to achieve in America because of immutable characteristics. And there were always a lot of people that weren't allowed to achieve in America. But we've gotten to the point where, especially in places like California, where you are paying people tons of money to absolutely not at all impact the problems they're supposed to address. And instead of being criticized for their failures, they are applauded for their failures and they are not expected to win, and they're just dumped more money into a system that's really just a circle of cash that does nothing for the homeless and that the citizen has to endure. And we live in this crazy society where no matter how hard you work, you're openly discriminated against, and if you object to it, well, you're the racist. We'll be back in just a second. Sorry for the tirade.
You're listening to Big Angry Law on KPRC 950.
Thank you for staying with me, or those that have just tuned in. This is Big Angry Radio on 950 AM KPRC. I'm coming from you live in Beverly Hills, California. And that's why we didn't have a show last night. I got tied up in doing real work, the reason I'm out here, the reason that allows me, the things that allow me to pay all my bills and spend time with y'all every night without having to tell y'all what you want to hear so this can turn into a juggernaut of extremism. That is really the way to make money in the talk radio space. But I work all my other jobs to make money, and this is, well, it's a passion project. I don't like to golf or fish or hunt. I mean, I'll do all of those things if I have to, but I much prefer to sit here and talk to y'all on the radio It is. It was called a hobbyist once derisively by someone at iHeart who was trying to, I don't know, condescend, a stupid person, right? A stupid little person who works behind the scenes, and I don't know if he even still works there, but just a very stupid, very little person, figuratively and literally, who wanted a product to sell that was the affirmation echo chamber that I'm never going to give y'all. And in the last segment, I had something to talk about, and I wasn't planning on going on this tirade about just the realities of it that you're really slapped in the face with out here in California. And there are, I mean, all this talk about new gun control, and now we're hearing the term assault pistol be trotted out. I mean, obviously, Joe Biden has talked about making semi-automatic weapons illegal. You know, I checked a bag. I don't typically obviously don't have a gun out here, but I am not going to walk around without some sort of personal security device, especially in a city where people have been abandoned by most of law enforcement and most certainly the district attorney's office. And you really have to be careful. And I've heard that from a number of people that we've met with in our business this week, is how crime has just become very palpable. And still, I mean, and now we're a week later. I still haven't heard a word from the Austin Police Department about the hit and run where we identified the driver. I mean, a week. We were told we'd get a call back in 24 hours. Not a single call. Not me. Not my father. They don't care. And that Austin norm is, that's the norm here, right? Where there's just this apathy. And even when, so back in August of 2021, there was this viral video that exploded. It exploded a little bit. The incident happened in August. I think the video exploded a couple of months later. But a woman was pushing a stroller with her child in it down a street, and a teenager in a stolen car, and we know his name now, it's Christopher Baca, just literally ran right, swerved, hit them, sent them both flying. Their injuries were minor, thank God, but it looked like he killed them, right? And then he took off. And this Dodge truck, this Good Samaritan, just slammed right in him to stop him. And you would think that he would have got a significant consequence, because you deserve a significant consequence when you're driving a stolen car. It looked like he intentionally did it, like swerved right into this woman and struck her in her stroller, her and the baby go flying. It is, it's a horrifying video. If you are a concerned citizen, it's a tough video to watch, right? And then you see the Good Samaritan risk his life and damage his own car in an attempt to, and I promise you, because he intentionally did it. So I imagine that his insurance company didn't want to pay. I imagine the insurance company of the stolen vehicle, Christopher Baca, that was driving, didn't want to pay. And he was probably just stuck with the damage. I mean, there was no money for Christopher Baca, who then got an incredibly minor slap on the wrist, right? And by incredibly minor, he was 15, he was high on drugs, and he got juvenile probation camp. And here's the real kicker. He was already on juvenile probation for crime. Now, he could have been taken to an adult court and certified as an adult for that incredibly violent act. He could have been held. And I do think we have a real problem, especially in California, right? If you look at the prison system in California, to survive in that system, you have to join a racialized gang. As a white person, you have to join some sort of Aryan gang. As a black person, you have to, I mean, it's all, you know, to exist without suffering horrible violence in the California criminal system, you have to either become a monster or a victim. And that is not how prison should be, right? That we should invest the time and money in our penal system, that it is both a punishment and a consequence for bad acts and a vehicle to safely remove monsters from society, to spend an incredible amount of time in prison until they come out and they're so old they're incapable of being monsters, or they just spend the rest of their life there because they need to be removed from society for the dangers that they pose to society, right? They don't need to house drug addicts. They don't need to house the mentally ill who aren't engaged in victim crimes, but that's what they are, and those people are just cannibalized in that system. So right now, sending kids to prison is typically a bad idea. But that, again, is a failure of the state in both Republican and Democrat-controlled states, but especially in California, right, where you would think that all the concern for the realities of recidivism and imprisonment and what California has decided, and a number of states are following suit, is, well, you know what, just the citizens can deal with it. The citizen victims can deal with it. Just, oh, well, tough, right? They need to learn to accept and to stomach a degree of victimization because of the legacy of white supremacy and all these other isms and reasons where who suffers the most. You know, crime is almost always intra-racial victim crime. And the people that suffer the most are poor communities of color in Los Angeles and across this country, right? And it's a bit insane. And you say, well, why are you spending an entire segment talking about this kid who 2 years ago as a 15-year-old did this horrible thing and suffered no consequential punishment? He basically got sent to a juvenile probation camp that he needed to go to anyway because he was on juvenile probation and was violating the terms of his probation. He basically got the consequence that he would have gotten had he just been found to have been using drugs while on probation. But that's not what happened. And this new, we have, the left, Democrats, have done a very good job at convincing society that it deserves to be victimized, and that allowing it to be victimized without justice and without consequence is in fact a suffering that we are required to endure. But the truth is, the government just doesn't want to offer the solutions. They want to pay, you know, private nonprofits that pay their administrators $250,000 a year to not have any noticeable impact on homelessness in New York. And, you know, have this legion might be more appropriate, of bureaucrats who make a big salary and do almost nothing for the problems they're supposed to be addressing. And you say, well, the cost of living, and, well, they're doing a good thing. And then, no, you're not supposed to get $250,000 a year for running a nonprofit that's not achieving any noticeable change, right? And she's probably one of thousands making that salary here in Los Angeles. You're not supposed to, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Should you make a livable wage and a decent living? Yes, but unless you're out there actually fundraising for private entities and not just taking, I mean, it's just insane to me. But that's the new norm. And if you criticize them, you're the bad guy. If you point to all the blight of homelessness, well, we just don't have enough. Well, if you got more money, what are you going to do? Take a larger salary, you absolute parasite, instead of actually doing the function of helping the people? But again, I'm in a mood. Let's get back to Christopher Baca. Why am I talking about this 17-year-old kid who is 15, everyone saw swerve in and hit a woman in a stroller and send both people flying and could have killed them both? Why am I talking about him? Because at 17, instead of being in some sort of facility locked down for his violence and trying to learn how to be a better person, well, Christopher Baca is dead, right? And how is he dead? Well, he's dead from criminal violence. 8:30 p.m. last Wednesday, he was discovered in a driveway filled with bullets here in Los Angeles. Neighbors had called a shots fired call, and they got out there and discovered him dying. The mother was quoted as saying, and I think it's a powerful quote, "The universe delivered the justice we weren't given in court, but a much harsher punishment than he'd have been dealt with in a court of law." And maybe Christopher Baca would be alive if the DA out here wasn't such a stain.
Big, angry law. With Charles Adams continues.
Now we got that percolator. Never made a latte greater. I'm saving $23 a week. We drive to a house in Preston. We see police arresting a man with his hand in a bag. Impressions. This place seems depressing. cost of parking.
Now, my intention tonight during the break, I was looking at a horrible story that I'm probably going to talk about this segment instead of continuing to discuss the plague of gun violence in California and the rhetoric I'm hearing in the local media out here that is all about taking semi-automatic or the assault pistols now, just semi-automatic pistols away from citizens, law-abiding citizens, as a way to combat the criminal violence and reading things like, well, law enforcement can't be on every corner, or there's no way for them. So the only solution is to eliminate their guns. But you're in a society here where when the criminals are caught with guns, they don't have much of a consequence, right? So you make things illegal, and while going to prison for a couple of years for a violent criminal isn't the end of the world, and they really just learn to be better criminals, but of course it's destructive for the life of a young professional or a young person with a regular job or a young, you know, who has a firearm to protect themselves. And I've also seen, some tweets, and I should have dug it up during break, of how it, you know, it's always a person without a gun that stops the shooter. And it was an Instagram post from the Quentin Quarantino account, which is a million plus blue check mark. And he has a caption about the civilian hero, Brandon Say, who in the mass shooter in Monterey, California, he was the one. So he went to one dance hall, the 17-year-old man who committed suicide, went to one dance hall and shot it up and killed a bunch of people, and went to a second one apparently to do the same. He had some, you know, insane personal grievance that this young man, Brandon Say, was able to, unarmed young man, engage him and disarm him. And this Quentin Quarantino, this big Instagram account, said it's always a hero with no gun and never a cop somehow. Now, neither of those are true, right? Like, I have spoken many times critically of the cops in Uvalde, the officers at Marjorie Stoneman, the one assigned to the campus, and the ones with the SO who built a perimeter and did nothing. And you can all go all the way back to Dylan Klebold and what was the other scumbag's name in Columbine, where the cops didn't enter. And I am always hypercritical of that. But there are a countless number of times where law enforcement engages active shooters, kills active shooters, put themselves in harm's way of active shooters, and those don't get much notice. And there's also, and we've talked about on this show, a number of times in America where armed citizens engaged active shooters. Obviously, the Silver Springs, the one here in Texas, where then the victims were paid hundreds of millions of dollars by the U.S. taxpayer because the Air Force didn't code a misdemeanor family violence conviction correctly, which is still insane to me, right? It's horrible that he committed that crime, but there's no way the U.S. taxpayers were at the, because they were required to find, the court was required to find that the U.S. government was more at fault than anyone else, and including the shooter, in the commission of the crime and the crime occurring, and that's crazy. But there it was, a citizen with an assault rifle who engaged and killed them. And I mean, I guess there's the possibility we could do away with the Second Amendment and take away all firearms from America. But the solution other than that, which is, you know, would require a constitutional amendment, the solution other than that is not stripping guns from law-abiding citizens. I mean, we don't need loopholes to background checks. We need to increase the consequences for those who have firearms who aren't allowed to have firearms, right? But we don't need to make it, as California has, is impossible for law-abiding citizens to protect themselves and arm themselves, and until we have some sort of paradigmatic change, which I don't think we'll ever receive the majority necessary in America to achieve that change, which would require a constitutional amendment. Now, I do think at some point, if the Supreme Court becomes unbalanced to the left, there'll be a massive jurisprudential activist movement to redefine what the second is saying. I think that's really how that occurs, and it'll probably occur, you know, sometime in the next two decades. But we are, I mean, we're in this paradigm where people keep pushing the narrative that robust, effective law enforcement is the solution, and citizens armed with weapons that are law-abiding is never the solution. And it's, and you know, 58,462 people like that comment. I mean, people cheer it despite it being actively just dishonest. And this is people using this instead of cheering Brandon Say, right, the hero. He was unarmed, but whether armed or not, whether a police officer or not, he's an absolute hero for disarming that monster who then went and ultimately committed suicide. He saved lives. And we should honor every hero and out every coward, right? Well, when the coward has an objection. Like, it's not cowardice if you're an unarmed citizen and there's a mass shooter for you to try to get you and your loved ones away from harm. In fact, that's your job, I would think, right? Especially as a parent. Police, it's a different story. It's your job to go in, and police cowardice, well, we shouldn't be able to take that check. It's just like this scumbag, this woman making, she could be, maybe she's not a scumbag. I got the scumbag sense, but maybe she's a nice person, making $250,000 a year and complaining about how there's not enough money, right? Well, you seem to be the problem, right? It's the fact that the bureaucracy of fighting homelessness, it's achieving nothing while just sucking at the taxpayer to the tune of, you would be horrified. All of y'all would be horrified if you looked at how much money big cities and states like New York and California, or even Texas, Houston, spend on homelessness, right? Because, you know, when I lived in the penthouse, there was just blight everywhere, campsites everywhere on Caroline. And you look at the amount of money and the amount of bed space and how really... And then, you know, I played that clip from the woman in Portland. It was like, they make it too easy on us. You know, they give us three hot meals a day. They give us money. We got to buy drugs. And we just sit out here and just life's a party as we destroy communities for participatory citizens, right? And again, a tirade. And I'm sorry, because it was my intent. There is this horrible story out of Baton Rouge of the sexual assault. Four men have been arrested of an LSU student, female student, that I wanted, and it's a delicate situation because I want to talk about it, but I don't want to talk about it and come across it anyway as victim blaming, because I don't. But I do want to talk about the need of male and females to be aware when they get too intoxicated and to have friends that help them and understand that they get home instead of strangers, because this story is awful, and I'm not going to be able to unpack it in the final minute of the show tonight. Sorry, you're only getting an hour out of me. I'm trying to. I was really irritated that I didn't get home in time to do a show last night. I'm going to try to give you content every day, but business trip, trying to make a big stack of money, and I've actually got to go have another meeting. But I didn't expect the whole show to be swept up in this aggravation about how those on the left in California want to tell you how there needs to be more laws on guns, while they're the same people that are arguing to not prosecute victim crime and to abandon victims to the victimizers in crimes or communities that they don't feel should be punished because of white supremacy. It's just insane, right? I don't care what color the victimizer is or what color the victim is. I think victims deserve justice and victimizers deserve consequence. And, I mean, the state needs to cross their T's and dot their I's to take your liberty, but the state needs to be making the damn effort. And that's the solution.